Look, a while back, I invited Michael Wooldridge in, and he'd written this wonderful book, and he was great friends with Peter Thompson, and we talked about golf, we talked about life, and all of his amazing journey in that particular book. But he's up to something else now, and he's joining me in the studio. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm good, Forb.
Good. Glad you could drop in. Now, you are working on the Mirage Country Club. Now, you're working on the golf course and you're doing wonderful things, but let's go back slightly earlier than that. You designed, you built the Mirage Country Club with Scacey. So what are you up to now after all these years?
Well, something of a renaissance, I fancy.
Okay.
Paul, but seeing you started very sensibly at the beginning, it's true indeed that Peter Thompson and myself, our little company, were invited to design that golf course in the mid-80s for Christopher Scace,
mm-hmm.
an ambitious and marvellously entrepreneurial fellow, intent of putting himself and Port Douglas, not necessarily in that order, on the world map. And indeed, our resort at Mirage was the number one destination resort, certainly in Australia. And so was the golf course. We built a really nice little course up on restricted ground, one where the hotel is lovely and sandy, with everything going for it, and the other on a mangrove swamp with nothing going for it. But we fixed that up very easily and quickly, with good help from local and dear friend John Morris, who was quick to find a quarry. And that was done. And the golf course went on very nicely for a while, Paul, but after a few years, Christopher fell on bad times, you might say, and so did Australia with the sort of depression and pilot strike and everything that went with it. It was very much against the destination, the good fortune of a destination resort in the far north of this huge country.
Mm.
And it still crippled it, frankly. Scace was off to Mallorca, as we know, and he was no use to us anymore. And a bunch of rather crestfallen Japanese who had taken it over did a very poor job of looking after it. So much so, a little group of us became very cross and disappointed at the way they had neglected the golf course in the early 90s. And we found some land and we built the links down the road, which gave Port Douglas a first-class golf course because Mirage was going down the hill at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah. So let's bring it up to the present day, and you would like to bring it back to its former glory or somewhere like that?
Yes, I'd like to. And it nothing to do with... My thoughts were always high and had high hopes for the place, but as it went down and down in the west, in the wet tropics, things come into terrible disrepair very quickly, and so it was no different for the golf course. The Japanese mercifully were removed or got out of it, and a few different people had it, all with ambitions, but with few dollars. And now recently, in fairly recent times, the Chinese group, Fulcher, have taken it over. And they've got the hotel looking halfway decent. And again, it's really doing quite well. And it is a fine, fine place. The landscaping's starting to look good. And the golf course is still not understood by Chinese people, I think. And I know about that sort of thing as being something worth spending lots of money on. It's still a puzzlement to them that we should have $1 million to spend on such a place.
Mm.
However, they're gradually changing things. And no small thanks to Geoffrey Peard, who's
yep.
their country club manager.
He's wonderful. He does our golf reports on Tuesday.
That's
yep.
typical of him.
No,
he's right out there, and he's off his chair and out there, and you know, there's a renaissance going on.
Yes, I know. When we first came up here, we met Jeff and some of the staff there, and they said, we really want to bring this back. And they're gathering more and more members, which is wonderful. So things are looking up again for Mirage.
They are. It's a result of that sort of enthusiasm and so on. And that has to be also reinforced with some proper action, and that's been slow. But he's been relentless. They've taken me back on board as their consultant. They have probably the best greenkeeper, which is an old term, golf course superintendent, you could possibly get. Most experienced in Alec Ross, but even Alec was like he was handcuffed unless he's got a few dollars. Yes. And he's getting those now. It's seeping through.
That is good, seeping through from the Chinese.
Seeping gradually down, yes, with reluctance and tears, no doubt. But anyway, it's coming.
Now, how does that make you feel as somebody who designed it, you built it, and you can start seeing it coming back to its former glory? What's that feel like?
Well, the nicest analogy for anybody who's got children, for example, is, is that, you know, finally, instead of loitering and lingering and malingering, the young person is start get off his arse and getting out there and doing well.
Isn't that wonderful? And because you consider this your baby, don't you?
One of them. I got 200 of them.
Well, 200 babies, sorry.
And grandchildren, I expect.
Grandchildren.
But anyway, look, it's good. We're getting a few dollars coming through, and we have a program. Jeff has put together a nice set-up for the country club members. He's got 125 members. They're all pretty keen, and they've got something to be keen about. The owners have allowed some drastic things to happen relatively in terms of draining the place, and you can play on it now almost every day.
Isn't that terrific?
In this rainy weather.
Well, that is fantastic. Now, I can't let you go without asking you about Christopher Skase. Now, the legend of the man, he's been... either people hated him or they loved him. What sort of bloke was he really?
Oh, I actually got to know him in so many guises. He was firstly a very... clever young man who was a financial correspondent for the Fin Review,
yeah,
Financial Times, I think, and then he had almost relentless ambition, and he was regarded in this country in the early 60s as somebody to listen to. Even the Parliament of the day, I remember saying, "Well, we better get Christopher Skase to come up and talk to us." So he was quite a fellow. And when a group of, first of all, I was employed by the Queensland government in Joe Bjelke-Petersen's team down in Brisbane.
To goodness gracious, you people, you don't worry about that.
No, do worry about that. And thank God for him, because without him and his flow and that sort of thing that some people laugh at, He got this thing going,
yep.
And he made sure, you know, all the people that got in the way, the do-gooders and those sort of people, loads of them.
Told them to nick off.
Bits of grass around their ankles and so on. Yeah, he got rid of them. And we got on with it.
Yep.
And this that resort was built in a year. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
They flew up 450 people.
Yep.
And what is now a little suburb called Beachfront Mirage, excised from the current Mirage property, you might say. On that area, he built a huge camp, and they worked 7 days a week for a year.
Whoa.
Built that hotel.
God, it was like the Empire State Building. They got it up in no time.
They did, and I had a group also. Peter Thompson and I had a nice little team, construction
yep.
team. And, of course, we ran into the ubiquitous and delightful, ever delightful John Morris.
Oh, yes.
And John was there almost, don't you worry about that, himself. And between he and Joe, there was no chance of failure. We made a super golf course.
That's really fantastic. I'm talking to Michael Walbridge about the Mirage Country Club, the golf course, and Joe Jelke-Peterson, John Morrison, of course, Christopher Scase. Now, Christopher, I've got a little story about Christopher Scase. They had a big party up here for all of the Seven Network, because Scasey owned the Seven Network. And his wife, Pixie, and him had this enormous party around the pool and everything, and all the Channel 7 newsreaders and all of that. And a particular newsreader from Adelaide that Pixie herself had selected and said, I think he'll make a good newsreader, put him into the station at in Adelaide. He came up to Pixie very inebriated at that party and put the hard word on Pixie. Yes, this is true. This is absolutely true. And Pixie, of course, went over to Christopher Scase and said, he just said blah, blah, blah to me. Well, of course, he didn't go back to his job as a newsreader. Oh, Michael's quiet now. Can't.
Well,
but Pixie,
quite a scandalous thing you just said.
It is a scandalous thing, and it happened. Pixie. And the guy's name was Sean Flannery. And he was a newsreader. I'd worked with him in radio in Sydney, and he became the newsreader at a very big salary in Adelaide. He'd only been there 6 months, went to the party. He was a very heavy drinker. And he went up to Pixie and said, darling, I can do what Christopher can't do.
He must have had a lot to drink, because Pixie wasn't really everybody's cup of tea. In fact, she was quite frightening.
Well, it was his cup of tea that night, he reckoned.
She was the most frightening part of the whole thing, really.
Pixie was. Pixie was.
I think so, but wouldn't dream of saying that sort of thing on the air.
Don't say it on the air. but Christopher Scase...
Anyway, they were a great team, Paul.
They were a great team. And
They put us on the map.
They did. Well, I think they did. And certainly
yes, did.
John Morris as well.
Oh, yeah.
But what about his end days in Mallorca? Everybody was saying, oh, he's faking this oxygen and everything. And, of course, he didn't. He died and lung problems and all of that. What a sad end to the man.
Yeah. It's terrible, really. He did smoke an awful lot when smoking wasn't recognised as being like a cardinal sin.
Yep.
In those days, in the mid-80s, he did smoke an awful lot. But I think he was done in by the banks. And
you do?
Yeah.
Done in by the banks.
If he'd had a different attitude, he'd have still kept going. We'd have had three or four lovely resorts around Australia. He liked Australia.
And the banks did him in, you reckon? Because the banks,
I think the banks
wouldn't have done that, Michael.
Well, anyway, I have some good sources too, and
yes.
That's what they suggest.
Okay.
But he was also inclined to be misled, and that was where Pixie came in my view.
Okay, I see. She was the woman behind the man, but sometimes she steered him in the wrong direction.
Well, in a direction that certainly didn't actually turn out to be Shangri-La down there in Mallorca.
There you go.
He was a nice bloke. He was a good person to be around in his heyday.
I imagine he
would have. I was so sad about it, I can tell you, because the thing, he did a great deal for himself in selling it to the Japanese, and they seemed to have a chip on both shoulders for the rest of their time, and they did an awful job on the place. Sheraton actually made it look good as best they could, bless them, but the die was cast for Mirage by the plane strike.
It was, and that was a bad time for a lot of people in the tourism industry. The pilot strike, yes. Thank you, Michael, for dropping in. It is always a pleasure to see you.
Oh, it's lovely. I hope I get a chance to give you a little bulletin from time to time, because we're back on our feet.
Well, let me tell you, any time you want to drop a bulletin in, you come in here, you're always welcome in the studio.
Thank you so much.